Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1154. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, part 14. The Yellow Journalism Peril, part 2. This is being recorded on September 29th of the year 2020. We are going to continue with analysis of a key part of the context in which the COVID-19 plandemic, that's with an L, has taken place. The evidence is very strong that the COVID-19 illness is part of a broad spectrum anti-China at one level and global Nazi / fascist undertaking that we will go into at greater length in weeks to come. It is amazing to me that people have not really taken stock of the fact that this plandemic or pandemic in the popular phraseology has taken place in the context of a full court press against China involving not only covert operations, but the new type of regime change destabilization that took hold in the 1980s, and that is overt / covert operations. Organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, the Jamestown Foundation, and other things that came into being under the watch of William Casey, CIA director under Reagan, and an individual whose CV in the intelligence community and international fascism dates from the late World War II period, when he was in charge of operations in Germany for the OSS in 1944 and 1945, right on up through the Cold War when he was one of the chief officials involved with the creation of the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Heritage Organization, and the Ethnic Heritage Outreach Organization. The precise name escapes me off the top of my head. But it is literally an overt Nazi wing of the Republican Party involving the Central and Eastern European collaborationist organizations that were part of the Galen organization at one level, the SS at another, and came into prominence as a result of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the World Anti-Communist League, as it used to be called. One of the features of this overt / covert series of operations, the full court press against China, is what I termed in our last program the yellow journalism peril. There has been a strident and weaponized media coverage of all things Chinese, including the plandemic. And we went into that in our last program. We will continue it here. In For the Record 1143, 44, and 45, we resumed analysis that we have involved ourselves in for a couple of decades now, namely the Turkophone and Muslim Uyghurs of Xinjiang province in China. They have been a focal point of destabilization of China since the early 1950s. The Muslim Brotherhood and its offshoots such as Al-Qaeda and ISIS are one of the factors in the Uyghur milieu. So is the pan-Turkist fascism of the National Action Party and the Grey Wolves. The Uyghur organizations trace back to the narco-fascist, the separatist inclinations, I should say, of the Uyghur interests trace back to the narco-fascist government of Chiang Kai-shek, which in many ways spawned the unrest that led to the eventual ascension of, or ascent, I should say, of Mao Zedong and the communists. In the decades since Mao's death, China has effected a remarkable pivot that we spoke about in connection with a recent book by Kurt Anderson. They basically have pivoted from communism to capitalism while keeping the basic chassis of their political system intact. They are communist in name only, and really a better term would be state capitalism. Neither Karl Marx nor the late Mao Zedong would recognize what's going on in China. Nonetheless, for reasons I will discuss in a future program, something of a fireside chat about the history of China and what I think is going on. And I think that in this country, things as seemingly separate from what is going on in China as the racial confrontations taking place in this country are part and parcel to an enormous and what I think is ultimately going to be devastating and exterminationist turn of events, not only in the U.S., but the world. At the conclusion of our last program, we once again resumed our coverage of the work of Adrian Zenz. He is a German and an end times Christian. He also is affiliated with, in fact, his cachet on both Xinjiang and, as we will see, apparently also Tibet, stems from his association with the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. That is another U.S. intel front, really a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, the OUNB, and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. It originated in the 1980s, at the same time as the National Endowment for Democracy, the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, and the Jamestown Foundation, which we will resume discussion of in just a minute. These are all U.S. intel fronts. And in connection with Hong Kong, too, we have seen manifestations of the OUNB milieu, which has assumed primacy in Ukraine. As we looked at in For the Record program 1143 and 1144, another NED-funded darling of the U.S. mainstream media, Joshua Wong, and some of his compatriots in the unrest in Hong Kong have been networking with elements of the Nazi Azov Battalion and the Pravi sector that decamped to Hong Kong under the auspices of an EU-funded NGO. As we looked at from a Gray Zone article from June 16th of 2020, authored by Ajit Singh, capital A-J-I-T, speaking of the cross-pollination between the OUNB milieu in Ukraine and what is going on in Hong Kong. The interest has been mutual with Hong Kong's Democrats, unquote, drawing inspiration from Ukraine's pro-Western Maidan, quote, revolution, unquote, that has empowered far-right fascistic forces. Hong Kong protesters have embraced the slogan, Glory to Hong Kong, unquote, adapted from Slava Ukraini or Glory to Ukraine, a slogan invented by Ukrainian fascists and used by Nazi collaborators during World War II that was repopularized by the Euromaidan movement. And of Boy Wonder Joshua Wong, quote, no matter the differences between Ukraine and Hong Kong, our fights for freedom and democracy are the same, Joshua Wong told the Kiev Post in 2019. We have to learn from Ukrainians and show solidarity. Ukraine confronted the force of Russia. We are facing the force of Beijing. In For the Record program 1072, I posted a picture which really sums up everything that has been going on in Ukraine and which embodies the very essence of what has taken place in Ukraine. It is the celebration in Lvov, Ukraine in the summer of 2018 of the 75th anniversary of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, the Galician Division. Go to the website and search the SpitfireList.com website and search the For the Record section, put in hashtag 1072. And that really sums up what is going on in Ukraine. And it is that milieu to which Adrian Zenz belongs. And Adrian Zenz has once again been cited as a source in the Fuhrer, that's F-U-R-O-R, although perhaps F-U-E-H-R-E-R might be a more appropriate term. Walt Disney has made a feature-length movie called Mulan, which is a development, a sequel or an outgrowth of a feature-length animated movie that came out courtesy of Disney in the late 1990s. Because part of it was filmed in Xinjiang, and the pro forma credits are given in the movie to the authorities in Xinjiang. It has occasioned a brouhaha, and people like Joshua Wong and Adrian Zenz are booing the haha that we are being treated to. New York Times of September 9th of 2020 by Amy Kim, QIM, and Edward Wong. Calls grew to boycott Mulan over China's treatment of Uyghur Muslims, unquote. Skipping down. The area surrounding Turpan, known for its rugged landscapes, is the site of a number of detention camps. That includes the earliest documented case of what China has called transformation to education, unquote, targeting Muslims from August of 2013, said Adrian Zenz, a researcher at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in Washington, who has studied Chinese policies toward the Uyghurs. On Monday, calls to boycott Mulan began growing on social media. Among the critics was Joshua Wong, a prominent Hong Kong pro-democracy activist who accused Disney of bowing to pressure from Beijing. And again, Adrian Zenz, a doctrinaire End Times Christian, a German citizen, by the way, not incidentally, and also, again, a researcher at the, quote, researcher, unquote, at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, a direct outgrowth of the Captive Nations Committee, the OUNB, and the ABN. He is, in short, a Nazi fellow traveler. His estimates of millions of Uyghurs, or upwards of 1 million Uyghurs being detained, are derived from a single broadcast on Istiklal TV, a pan-Turkist outlet that has featured people who are affiliated with the milieu, plural, of both Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And the situation of Adrian Zenz. Again, he's an End Times Christian, and as I joked about in our last program, you can tell that he is, because he is already being raptured. He is being projected directly into the heavens, professionally speaking. He is now, in addition to being a, quote, expert, unquote, on Xinjiang, and as, by the way, as we've noted in the past, Xinjiang has been the focal point of destabilization, really since the early 1950s, and organizations like the UNPO, the Unrecognized Nations and Peoples Organization, a vehicle of the Habsburg milieu, organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, the Pan-Turkist Movement, the National Action Party, CIA, and BNB have all been active in the Uyghur community, and there have been a number of violent incidents both inside and outside of China. Certainly China is engaged in a counter-insurgency effort of sorts there. The U.S. would be doing far more, I think, in terms of overt violent action against anyone who undertook anything like what some of the Uyghurs have been doing in Xinjiang. Back to Adrian Zenz, however. He is now a, quote, anthropologist, unquote. And he is not only an expert on the Uyghurs, but he is an expert on Tibet. Courtesy of The Guardian from the UK of October 22nd of, September 22nd of 2020. Anyway, I will get the date right. I obviously did a typo here. The Guardian of September 22nd of 2020 report charts China's mass expansion of labor program in Tibet, this by Helen Davidson, and agencies, unquote. One wonders what agencies they might be. I could take a guess. MI6, CIA, who knows? This reads in part, And note the direct projection, professionally speaking, of alien Zens into the ether. Chinese authorities are dramatically expanding a mass labor program in Tibet, which analysts have compared to alleged forced labor operations in Xinjiang, according to evidence compiled by a German anthropologist and corroborated by Reuters. China has set quotas to move hundreds of thousands of Tibetan rural laborers off their land and into military-style facilities to train them as factory workers, according to documents analyzed by researcher Adrian Zenz for the Jamestown Foundation, a U.S. research institute. Well, again, calling Adrian Zenz an anthropologist is a bit of a reach. The Jamestown Foundation, as we looked at in For the Record 1143, yet another intelligence front, U.S. intelligence front, founded in the early 80s when William Casey was ruling the roost at CIA. By the way, I incorrectly spoke in our last program. It was not Bruno Begay, a Nazi war criminal and a member of the Nazi SS, who led the 1938 SS expedition to Tibet, was a guy named Ernest Schaefer. However, Bruno Begay was part of that. He also was a Nazi war criminal. He had a hundred some odd Soviet POWs who had, quote, Asiatic, unquote, features killed so that their bodies and skeletons could be studied for, quote, anthropological reasons. In For the Record 547, among other programs, we took a look at Tibet and its fascist heritage, its long-standing association with the CIA, that is to say, the Tibetan exile movement under the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama himself was tutored by Heinrich Harrer, an SS officer, and the aforementioned SS war criminal Bruno Begay, part of, but not the leader of, the 1938 SS exhibition to Tibet, was part of the Tibetan government in exile under the Dalai Lama up until through the 1990s. The Dalai Lama is the opposite of what he has been represented as being. As we looked at in For the Record 547, he prays daily to a Mongolian war god. He's just not as represented. This is something people have a really tough time with, as Hitler noted quite brilliantly, frankly, in Mein Kampf. Most people tell little lies. They would be afraid to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept the thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end. The Dalai Lama is an example of that. Speaking of the big lie, we are going to take a look at a number of other organizations and individuals who have been engaging in the yellow journalism peril. In particular, something that has cropped up a lot in U.S. media and the CIA water-carrying New York Times. It has been carrying water for the CIA for a long time. The organization is the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, or ASPI. And the New York Times of September 25th of 2020 has an article by Chris Buckley and Austin Ramsey, R-A-N-Z-Y. Night images show China has added detention sites in mostly Muslim Xinjiang, reads in part, as China faced rising international censure last year over its mass internment of Muslim minorities, officials asserted that the indoctrination camps in the western region of Xinjiang had shrunk as former camp inmates rejoined society as reformed citizens. Researchers at the Australian Strategic, researchers at the Australian Strategy Policy Institute, or ASPI, on Thursday challenged those claims of an investigation that found that Xinjiang authorities had been expanding a variety of detention sites since last year. that same ASPI, is the source for another article by those same individuals, Chris Buckley and Austin Ramsey. In today's New York Times, today being September 29th of 2020, in the Western edition, making ruins of mosques and shrines, and skipping down. A new report by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, a research group based in Canberra, systematically gauges the degree of destruction and alteration to religious sites in recent years. It estimated that around 8,500 mosques across Xinjiang have been completely demolished since 2017. More than a third of the number of mosques, the government says, are in the region. Well, again, in assessing these claims, one certainly has to take into account the sources for those claims. It also, I would say in passing, is more than a little ironic for the U.S. to be bellyaching about another country's treatment of Muslims, with the CIA having spawned the first Afghan war against the Soviet Union in 1979 and 1980, which dragged on for about 10 years and cost the lives of about a million people. Also spawned Al-Qaeda. That resulted in September 11th, and a whole variety of other unfortunate occurrences. The still continuing war, U.S. war in Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, the number of Muslims killed directly or indirectly as a result of U.S. covert operation and or military involvement at this point would number somewhere in the millions. I will also note that as we have looked at in various programs, the ascent of Narendra Modi's Hindutva fascist RSS and Narendra Modi's RSS-led government in India was greatly assisted by people like Pierre Omidyar of eBay, in turn, institutions that are linked to the CIA, such as Facebook, which was capitalized in part by Facebook, and organizations like the aforementioned National Endowment for Democracy and the Agency for International Development were involved in the ascent of Narendra Modi's government. And the things that Narendra Modi's government has been doing to Muslims are far worse than what appears to be going on in Xinjiang. However, it gets intermittent coverage and certainly is not a focal point for prolonged international brouhaha. An excellent article in The Gray Zone of March 26th of 2020, again by Ajit Singh, capital A-J-I-T, capital S-I-N-G-H last name, goes into the nature of the organizations that are the source for much of the yellow journalism peril to which we are being subjected, and specifically the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, or ASPI, has come under withering criticism from relatively moderate elements in Australia itself. This article, again, by Ajit Singh, Grey Zone, March 26th of 2020. Quote, forced labor, unquote, stories on China, brought to you by U.S. Gov, NATO, and arms industry to drive Cold War PR blitz. It reads in part, skipping down. The Australian Strategic Policy Institute and Washington, D.C.-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, are the main institutions responsible for the forced labor studies. The reports have also relied heavily on an evangelical religious fanatic billed as the leading expert on Xinjiang, Adrian Zenz, who said he is led by God on a mission, unquote, against China. A close look at the reports churned out by these bodies reveal serious biases and credibility gaps that Western media willfully ignores in its bid to paint China as the world's worst human rights violator. Both ASPI and CSIS are right-wing, militaristic think tanks funded by U.S. and Western governments, megacorporations, and an eye-popping array of weapons manufacturers. As previously reported by the Gray Zone, Adrian Zanz is a far-right fundamentalist Christian, and by the way, they also reported, but it's not mentioned here, a Nazi fellow traveler, part of the OUNB, ABN milieu. And he is a far-right fundamentalist Christian, but he is far more than that. Adrian Zanz, as previously reported by the Gray Zone, Adrian Zanz is a far-right fundamentalist Christian whose questionable but incendiary accusations against China have led to the Western press crowning him as the leading international, quote, expert, unquote, on Xinjiang. Zanz's most recent claims of forced labor, unquote, were published by a journal founded and managed by U.S. and NATO military operatives. Skipping down. The three reports relied upon in the recent forced labor, unquote, media coverage are authored by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, which we have spoken about, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Adrian Zanz. While presented by the Western press as impartial, expert assessments, a closer look raises serious concerns about the biases and credibility of these, quote, studies, unquote. On March 1st, ASPI published a policy brief titled Uyghurs for Sale, Re-education, Forced Labor and Surveillance Beyond Xinjiang. The paper triggered the renewed round of media accusations against China. While ASPI describes itself as, quote, an independent, nonpartisan think tank, unquote, a characterization that has been parroted by the Western press, it is in fact a right-wing militaristic outfit that was founded by the Australian government in 2001 and is funded by the country's Department of Defense. One more time. While ASPI describes itself, and again, they are the source for much of the yellow journalism peril vis-a-vis Xinjiang that we've heard about, while ASPI describes itself as an independent, nonpartisan think tank, a characterization that has been parroted by the Western press, it is in fact a right-wing militaristic outfit that was founded by the Australian government in 2001 and is funded by the country's Department of Defense, and that's not all the other funders of ASPI. ASPI is also sponsored by a host of weapons manufacturers, including Raytheon Australia, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, MBDA Missile Systems, Saab AB, Thales, Thales, and Australia. Ironically, Australia's Foreign Influence Transparency Scheme, enacted by the center-right Liberal Party to monitor the alleged threat of Chinese political interference, unquote, in the country, has revealed ASPI's extensive sources of foreign funding, including the U.S. State Department, the U.K. Foreign and Commonwealth Office, the government of Japan, and NATO. Again, this from a center-right-founded Australian body. One more time, because it's critical. Ironically, Australia's Foreign Influence Transparency Scheme, enacted by the center-right Liberal Party to monitor the alleged threat of Chinese political interference in the country, has revealed ASPI's extensive sources of foreign funding, including the U.S. State Department, U.K. Foreign and Commonwealth Office, the government of Japan, and NATO. A recent profile of ASPI in the Australian Financial Review notes that the organization has, quote, been accused of fomenting anti-China hysteria to the alleged benefit of its benefactors, unquote. ASPI has been so bellicose, it has come in for criticism from major figures in Australian foreign policy circles. Former Australian Foreign Minister Bob Carr has slammed ASPI for pushing a, quote, one-sided pro-American view of the world, unquote, while the former Australian Ambassador to China, Jeff Raby, added that ASPI is the architect of the China threat theory in Australia. One more time. Again, this is critical for understanding this because it is the ASPI that is among the primary sources, along with Citizen Zen's, for Chinese are crushing the Uyghurs, etc. Former Australian Foreign Minister Bob Carr, C-A-R-R, has slammed the ASPI for pushing a, quote, one-sided pro-American view of the world, while the former Australian ambassador to China, Jeff Raby, added that ASPI, quote, is the architect of the China threat theory in Australia, unquote. Australian Senator Kim Carr of the Labour Party has echoed the criticism of ASPI, condemning the think tank for seeking to, quote, promote a new Cold War with China, unquote, in collaboration with the U.S. In a February 2020 parliamentary session, Carr warned that, quote, in parts of the Australian defence and security establishment, there are hawks intent on fighting a new Cold War, unquote, with China, highlighting ASPI's extensive funding from the U.S. State Department's Global Engagement Center, headed by former CIA officer and Navy fighter pilot Leah Gabriel. Carr said ASPI has received nearly $450,000 in funding from the U.S. State Department for the 2019 to 2020 financial year. ASPI claims that the amount is, quote, less than half, unquote, of the figure stated by Carr. These criticisms of ASPI appear to be well-founded. Since 2012, ASPI has been headed by Peter Jennings, J-E-N-N-I-N-G-S, a former Australian Department of Defense official. Jennings is an ardent advocate of U.S. imperialism who has staunchly defended the Iraq War, supported regime change in Syria, and pointed to Ukraine and Iraq to argue that, quote, the West is setting the bar for a military response too high, unquote. Jennings believes that, quote, the rise of Leninist autocracies, unquote, threaten Australia and global peace, applying the label to China and North Korea and, bafflingly, Russia and Iran. Well, those are Leninist autocracies, are they not? Obviously, you know, I'm being sarcastic. Continuing, speaking of former Australian Department of Defense official and ASPI head Peter Jennings, not to be confused, by the way, with the late American journalist of the same name, he is an ardent advocate of expanding and making bulletproof, unquote, Australia's military alliance with the U.S. and, quote, letting the Beijing bully know this is our neighborhood, unquote, including expanding joint naval presence in the Indian Ocean. Jennings and ASPI have also pushed for Australia to join Washington's global campaign to ban Chinese telecom giant Huawei from 5G networks around the world. Australia banned China's Huawei and ZTE from providing the country with 5G technology in 2018. On March 1st, ASPI published a policy brief titled Uyghurs for Sale, Re-education, Forced Labor, and Surveillance Beyond Beijing. The report was funded by the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office, or FCO, which oversees Government Communications Headquarters, GCHQ, the UK equivalent to the National Security Agency, and the Secret Intelligence Services, or SIS, commonly known as MI6. As Mohamed Elmazi and Max Blumenthal previously reported for the Grey Zone, the FCO backs the Integrity Initiative, a propaganda mill which smears left-wing figures across the West, including former UK Labour leader, UK Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn. While Beijing's policy in Xinjiang is indisputably focused on combating religious extremism, separatism, and political instability, the government openly admits to this. The author's claims of a dystopian forced labor regime seem to rely more on sensationalism and speculation than concrete evidence. For example, the authors claim that workers are tightly controlled with, quote, little freedom of movement and isolated from their families, unquote. As evidence, they cite a Chinese language media report which features a story about a migrant worker from Xinjiang who obtained full-time industrial employment in the urban province of Shandong through the government's employment program. The woman describes the challenges of working far away from her family in Xinjiang, but emphasizes that she has used the program to earn more income and pay for household renovations and new livestock back home. What's more, the woman states that while she initially wanted work through the program for only 1 year, she now wants to work for at least 3 years, given the income it allows her to earn, indicating that she is voluntarily choosing to participate in the program for economic benefit. Throughout that report, the authors refer to housing provided for migrant workers as, quote, segregated dormitories, unquote. On the one hand, the authors decry the segregation, unquote, and isolation, unquote, of the Uyghur workers who, quote, speak almost no Mandarin, so communication with locals is largely non-existent, unquote. But at the same time, they denounce Mandarin language classes offered to workers there as insidious, quote, political indoctrination, unquote. The authors claim that workers' ideology and behavior are closely monitored, unquote, citing the existence of a psychological consulting service. The authors search for a variety of keywords relating to Xinjiang labor transfers on the Chinese search engine Baidu and cite the increase in search results over time as indicating the increasing importance of the program to the Chinese government. This would be akin to analyzing U.S. policy based on the volume of Google search results. Ultimately, only 2 pages and a case study of a single factory are devoted to establishing the case of forced labor, unquote, with the vast majority of the 56-page report focused on connecting this alleged involuntary program with the major Western corporations and pressuring them to disengage with China. This basically is the real meat of this, in my estimation. It is the economic component of the full court press against China. And I'll put that and COVID-19 and things as seemingly disparate as the racial strife in the U.S. in a much larger context a few shows from now. Ultimately, only 2 pages and a case study of a single factory are devoted to establishing the case of forced labor, unquote, with the vast majority of the 56-page report focused on connecting this alleged involuntary program with the major Western corporations and pressuring them to disengage with China. The ASPI report presents no original evidence from workers who have been forced to work in this program, but cites anonymous testimonies, unquote, from, beginning again. The ASPI report presents no original evidence from workers who have been forced to work in this program, but cites anonymous testimonies, unquote, from an obscure far-right online blog called Bitter Winter. The blog is a project for the Center for Studies on New Religions, or CESNR, capital C, capital E, capital S, capital M, capital U, capital R, an Italy-based organization that opposes what it calls anti-cult terrorism. By the way, we went into CESNR and people like Massimo Introvigne and J. Gordon Melton, about whom we'll hear more in a minute, in For the Record 521. This is a really interesting fascist organization, and I think it is quite fair to call it fascist. It is affiliated with the far right in Italy and explicitly fascist organizations and the most reactionary elements of the Vatican. Massimo Introvigne, by the way, is a part of the traditionalist Catholic milieu along with Steve Bannon. And yet, as we will see and as we saw in For the Record 521, this far-right conservative Vatican organization goes to bat for some of the most egregious cults, which themselves would certainly be fascist, but which would be thoroughly opposed to anything that would be viewed as mainstream Catholicism or Christianity. Again, a very interesting organization. One of the things we concluded for the Record 521 with was a look at the pro-vampire, I mean that literally, pro-vampire sentiments of Massimo Intravigne and J. Gordon Melton. You dig into the vampire milieu, and although ostensibly it is a, you know, ha-ha-ha, you know, Saturday night horror movie milieu, a party animal milieu, you dig into that and you'll find some really dark, dark stuff. Things that would make Jeffrey Epstein look like the head of the Kiwanis Club. Now, continuing with Biffer Wimper and Cessnor. Biffer Wimper and its parent organization had vigorously defended fanatical Chinese religious movements, including Falun Gong. We looked at that associated with Steve Bannon and the CIA, and the Church of the Almighty God, or Eastern Lightning. The latter is a Chinese Christian sect which believes that Jesus Christ has been reincarnated as a Chinese woman currently living in Queens, New York. Of course, a lot of these other cults, there are a couple of reincarnated Jesuses in Korea and elsewhere. Again, this will give you an idea of whom, and this is really interesting because this is a far-right-wing Vatican, far-right-wing Italian affiliated organization, and yet they go to bat for organizations like Falun Gong and the rest. Biffer Wimper and its parent organization, and this is one of the sources for the ASPI, as I said before, rereading a section of the Ajit Singh article. The ASPI report presents no original evidence from workers who have been forced to work in this program, but cites anonymous testimonies, unquote, from an obscure far-right online blog. Called Biffer Wimper, the blog is a project for the Center for Studies on New Religions, or CESNR, an Italy-based organization that opposes what it calls anti-cult terrorism. Biffer Wimper and its parent organization have vigorously defended fanatical Chinese religious movements, including Falun Gong and the Church of the Almighty God, or Eastern Lightning. The latter is a Chinese Christian sect which believes that Jesus Christ has been reincarnated as a Chinese woman currently living in Queens, New York. I don't think she's Chinese. I think that's AOC. continuing. Eastern Lightning is notorious for mass kidnappings, assaults, and murderous violence against perceived demons, unquote, or non-believers, including bludgeoning a woman to death for refusing to give recruiters her phone number in 2014. During the 2019 Israeli elections, BuzzFeed reported that Twitter suspended dozens of Hebrew language accounts run by the cult for, quote, amplifying political messages for right-wing Israeli politicians, unquote. Cessnor has also taken up the cause of the Japanese doomsday cult Aum Shinrikyo, which was responsible for the 1995 Tokyo sarin gas attack. Cessnor board member J. Gordon Melton was paid by Aum Shinrikyo to travel to Japan to document alleged human rights violations against the group. Parenthetically, the Dalai Lama is also an apologist for Aum Shinrikyo and had networked with Shoko Asahara, the guru of that organization. We looked at that in For the Record 547. Continuing. Cessnor founder Massimo, M-A-S-S-I-M-O, Intravigne, capital I-N-T-R-O-V-I-G-M-E, is the editor-in-chief of Biffer Wimper. Intravigne, again, that's a source for the ASPI. Intravigne is an ultra-conservative religious zealot who contends that Christians are, quote, the most persecuted group in the world, unquote, due to abortion, gay marriage, and hate speech laws, which he contends suppress their religious freedom. Intravigne considers communism to be an existential threat to religion, writing that, quote, negotiating with Beijing is like the proverbial supping with the devil, unquote. Intravigne regularly appears in videos produced by the Church of the Almighty God, Eastern Lightning, advocating on their behalf and claiming the cult is a victim of, quote, propaganda, unquote, and fake news, unquote. Intervigne has deep political roots in the religious far right and was a longtime member and former vice president of the Italian organization Alleanza Cattolica, participating in the group from 1972 until 2016. During his time with the organization, Alleanza Cattolica advocated for Chilean military dictator Augusto Pinochet to be released following his arrest in the UK, denounced the Progressive World Social Forum as, quote, a laboratory for subversion, unquote, and endorsed the Northern League, or Liga Norda, a far-right, anti-immigrant, Islamophobic political party in Italian elections. By the way, they were a major element of the P2-connected coalition government in Italy under Silvio Berlusconi himself, a former member of the P2. Continuing. The director in charge of Bitter Winter is Marco Respinti, R-E-S-P-I-N-T-I, a far-right Christian conservative who describes his work as, quote, devoted to serve and protect the Western heritage of life, liberties, and property, unquote, and working towards a society of limited government, free enterprise, natural family, and traditional moral values, unquote. Respinti is a senior fellow at the Russell Kirk Center for Cultural Renewal and a founding member of the Center for European Renewal, two ardently conservative organizations. He is also editor-in-chief of the anti-gay, anti-choice publication International Family News. As they push forward with their anti-China frenzy, Western media outlets are not concerned with the serious issues related to the biases and credibility of the ASPI report. In fact, they seem intent on stifling any criticism of their narrative. Shortly following the release of the report, the state-run Australian Broadcasting Corporation aired a profile of lead author Vicky Xuchong Zhu, that's X-I-U-Z-H-O-N-G, capital X-U, as part of their Australian Story documentary series. According to Yi Yi Zhui, XUE, a Chinese-Australian PhD student at the University of Sydney, who was an interviewee on the program, the broadcaster pushed him to, quote, praise Vicky's research on Xinjiang, and made it clear that, quote, they did not need my negative comments or to hear that he disagreed with Zhu. The silencing of alternative viewpoints on China appears to be part of a larger trend within Australian media. Michael, a Chinese Muslim who lives in Australia and requested anonymity to protect himself from reprisal by his employer, told The Grey Zone that Australian media outlets often attempt to manipulate Chinese Australians into echoing the official narrative on China. Quote, SBS, a television network funded by the Australian government, called me for an interview on Chinese Muslims in Australia, Michael told The Grey Zone. Again, quoting, when I did not tell her what she wanted to hear, she asked me if my family was held hostage, in danger, or being coerced, unquote. Still quoting, she wanted me to confirm her narrative that the Chinese government had operatives following me and were actively suppressing me in Australia, unquote, continued Michael. Again, quoting, anyway, she never called back, unquote. There are more Chinese Australians who have had similar experiences. They seem to cast a wide net and hope to get someone like Vicky Xu who will just confirm their narratives, unquote. Unsurprisingly, Adrian Zenz's flimsy research on forced labor has not been published in a reputable academic journal, but rather, quote, the Journal of Political Risk, unquote, a publication headed by former NATO and U.S. national security state operatives. The publication was founded by Anders Corr, A-N-D-E-R-S, capital C-O-R-R, whose bio describes him as, quote, having worked for several consultancies and government agencies, including Booz Allen Hamilton, the U.S. Army, the U.S. Pacific Command, the U.S. Special Operations Command, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, and the North American Treaty Organization, or NATO. The editor of the publication is Neil Siviter, capital S-I-V-I-T-E-R, who, quote, previously worked as a junior professional fellow at the NATO Association of Canada, unquote, and, quote, has also held various internship positions with the Canadian government and U.S. Consulate General in Toronto, unquote. The final study accusing China of implementing forced labor programs against Uyghur Muslims was a report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, entitled, quote, Connecting the Dots in Xinjiang, Forced Labor, Forced Assimilation, and Western Supply Chains, unquote. Like ASPI, CSIS is a militaristic think tank funded by the U.S. government and a host of military allies, including the United Kingdom, Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, the United Arab Emirates, Canada, Australia, Turkey, Germany, Italy, and the EU. CSIS also receives significant funding from a number of weapons manufacturers, fossil fuel corporations, and banks. And again, that is a really interesting constellation of sources and institutions to be involved with the ASPI. And again, the New York Times presenting organizations like that and people like Adrian Zenz. It's a wild. Now he's an anthropologist. No? I guess nice work if you can get it, and he got it. Turning back to Cesnur and Massimo in Provigne. Again, we went into that in For the Record 521. They have links to the Milieu of the Knights of Malta, the P2 Lodge, Opus Dei, also an insidious organization in Latin America called Tradition, Family, and Property, which has strong links with Third Reich and fascist emigres in that area, the CIA, and also basically things that are at the extreme end even of fascism. Intervigne has run interference for a number of things in an article called Disreputable Forces at Work Among the Sect Researchers at Cesnur, this by Michiel, M-I-C-H-I-E-L-L, Lute, capital L-O-U-T-E-R, from August 13th of 1997, talking about Intervigne. Again, Massimo Intervigne of Bitter Winter and Cesnur and a source for ASPI. Intervigne, by the way, is a member of the CCB, a right extremist flavor of the Italian Christian Democrats, who in the past year ended an alliance with the neo-fascist Lega Nord, and who barely lost the election to the Forza Italia with Berlusconi, their strong leader. What do you really think about fascism? Massimo de Intervigne was asked. Ha ha ha, in my own country, I prefer to describe myself as middle right. Look, our alliance could have won the election if they had taken the proper fascists of the MSI on board. But we didn't do that, and don't forget the rest of it, but the totalitarian spirits and the communists with the glorification of Stalin and his gulags. The MSI, by the way, the Movimento Sociale Italiano, is the post-World War II incarnation of Mussolini's black shirts that evolved directly, again, from Mussolini and has had a lot of input from the P2, from CIA and others. J. Gordon Melton and Massimo Intervigne also have engaged in pro-vampire activity. Very quickly from the Los Angeles Daily News of July 23rd of 1997, Coffin break to vampires everywhere. Fangs for the memories, unquote, by Carol Bidwell. Current interest in things occult, mystical, or mysterious, as evidenced by the popularity of shows such as The X-Files, quote, can be attributed to people's confusion over religion, intrigue with the devil, and uncertainty about the afterlife, said Massimo Intervigne, a teacher of sociology and religion at one of the 13 Vatican universities in Rome. It is during periods like this that the idea of vampires gains some credence. We're talking Dracula 97, the four-day gathering in celebration of the centennial of Bram Stoker's Gothic novel Dracula. Quote, there are 100 scholars coming to present papers on vampires, but it's really a party, unquote, said J. Gordon Melton, who's organizing the event with Massimo Intervigne. Quote, the majority of people coming are just people like us who like vampire and horror movies. It's going to be fun, a bunch of silly people dressing up and biting each other on the neck. I haven't got time to really go into, but things like this are often a cover for really, really dark, dark things. Kiddie porn, snuff, you name it. Things, again, that would make Jeffrey Epstein look like the head of the Kiwanis Club. And then people like J. Gordon Melton and Massimo Intervigne are a source for the ASPI, and they in turn are a source for the vaunted New York Times. Give you an idea of how extreme the press against China is. China hasn't been in a war in more than 40 years, and they haven't been in a major war since Korea. Nonetheless, the U.S. Naval Institute magazine of April of 2020 has an article called Unleash the Privateers by Colonel Mark Cancian, I may be mispronouncing the gentleman's last name, C-A-N-C-I-A-N, and Brandon Schwartz. Colonel Cancian is a retired colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he writes, naval strategists are struggling to find ways to counter a rising Chinese Navy. The easiest and most comfortable course is to ask for more ships and aircraft. By the way, they're doing that, and the defense contractors who have funded ASPI are no doubt happy with that. But with a defense budget that may have reached its peak, that may not be a viable strategy. Privateering, authorized by letters of marque, could offer a low-cost tool to enhance deterrence in peacetime and gain advantage in wartime. It would attack an asymmetric vulnerability of China, which has a much larger merchant fleet than the U.S. Indeed, an attack on Chinese global trade would undermine China's entire economy and threaten the regime's stability. Finally, despite pervasive myths to the contrary, U.S. privateering is not prohibited by U.S. or international law. Basically, to make a long story short, they are arguing for armed and violent piracy against Chinese merchant shipping. Perhaps we'll talk about Chinese maritime strategy in the future program as part of an overall fireside chat vis-a-vis China and Asia in general. It is difficult to imagine that Colonel Cancian, being a retired colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps, does not understand the lyrics of the Marine Corps hymn, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, nor it's inconceivable that he doesn't understand that history. To the shores of Tripoli refers to one of the earliest U.S. Marine Corps actions, which was against Barbary pirates, again, on the shores of Tripoli. Piracy is illegal, and it is amazing that this type of thing is considered routine. And again, it's unthinkable to me that Colonel Cancian does not know what the U.S. Marine Corps hymn entails. Again, China has not been in the war in 40 years, and yet the general tone of U.S. journalism, including in this case military journalism against China, could be viewed as nothing more, nothing less than warmongering. Indeed, U.S. Marines, however, have been involved in combat against elements like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and they in turn overlap the Uyghurs. However, we won't be overlapping anymore because we are out of time. This concludes For the Record program number 1150. 54, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now Part 14, Yellow Journalism Peril Part 2, being recorded on September 29th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.